Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And it's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about us doing the hard work to implement freedom. Because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. But we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. Exodus 15:3 says, "The Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name." Are we indeed warriors? Are we indeed warriors in the spiritual realm? Claiming ground for the kingdom of Jesus Christ? Are we doing those spiritual battles in the prayer realm, or are we being kind of lazy about it? It was really impressed upon me this last week that we need to be in the fight in the spiritual realm. We really do. Need to be in prayer. Need to be journaling what we're praying for. Journaling what we feel the Lord's putting on our hearts. And talking about it with our brothers and sisters in Christ. Some people think that you can kind of sit in your little Christian bunker and watch the armies of the evil one march by outside, destroying everyone. And that's true. We got to get out, get on the battlefield, but first we need to do the work in prayer. The battle in the courtrooms of heaven. We need to focus on that, I think. We're coming into this ear period. I don't know if you all have felt it, but the last few days have been very intense. And I actually mentioned it to somebody else, and they said, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of intense darkness trying to push in, it feels like. So in those situations, we need to redouble our efforts in prayer, need to make sure we're extending as much grace and mercy as we can to all of our friends and family and neighbors around us, and that we're really understanding that that there are physical manifestations of the battles in the spiritual realm. I really believe that. I know many of you do. And we see it, whether we're talking nations or we're talking individuals, we see it all the time. And it's important that when we are in those time periods that our mooring is solid, our foundation is solid, and that we're not taking things for granted. We're doing the things we're supposed to, the fundamentals we're supposed to. My dad actually taught when we were coming up and we're playing baseball, you know, you master the fundamentals. And a lot of the other complicated stuff will take care of itself. You know, worry about concentrating on fielding, putting the bat on the ball, as he used to say. So those fundamentals, when you focus on those, the fundamentals of prayer, praying with your spouse and your family together, talking at the dinner table. Those are very important things, especially as things are starting to get very intense. And I'm going to go through a lot of stuff today and a few surprising things. A lot of it, once again, not covered in the mainstream media, at least that I've seen. So we're going to cover it because that's what the story news behind the news. And that brings us Daily intelligence briefing on the international front in the Middle East. Talked about the flashpoint of Kirkuk and the fact that Iraqi troops and Iranian militias captured the oil fields in Kirkuk, and oddly, the Kurds didn't make any resistance. It didn't make any sense at the time, but what I'm about to tell you, I think, will. They were going to move farther north, and they clashed. And now it looks like it might be silent on that front. The announcement happens today. U.S.-backed Syrian Kurdish. Okay, so these are not Iraqi Kurds, but Syrian Kurdish militias. Part of Syria. And Deb Cowell has the story and is saying that there was probably a Syrian Russian U.S. deal to allow the Kurdish militias to take that oil field while Kirkuk was claimed by Iraq. You follow what I'm saying? So they're trying to divide up the oil fields now, and it looks like that's what's going on. And also, apparently, as a prize to the Syrian Kurdish YPG militia for its role in leading to the fall of Raqqa, the ISIS capital. So we're going to continue to watch this and see if the flashpoint around Kirkuk settles down, and if that's the case, then it very likely was some sort of deal cut. Also on the international front and in the Middle East, 58 people killed in Egypt by a Muslim Brotherhood mass terror attack. Now, I don't understand how we have still not officially recognized here in the United States the Muslim Brotherhood and all of its other affiliated organizations as terrorist organizations. We had the Holy Land Foundation trial, which, as a matter of fact, in law established who those organizations are because they well, they found him in a raid of a secret sub-basement prior to the trial. And it literally said, we're the Muslim Brotherhood, here are our organizations, colon, and listed them all. So now we have another attack, but this is in the Middle East in Egypt. 58 more people dead because of the Muslim Brotherhood, and we still have reticence to call it a terrorist organization here in the United States. I hope Trump does. I really do. Because there's pressure going the other way that, oh, we can't do that because organizations that were named in the Holy Land Foundation trial, like Council of American Islamic Relations, North American Islamic Trust, would be implicated. Well, yeah. Why are we afraid to implicate them if they're associated? And it was found, as a matter of fact, in law in a trial that they were part of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood. I don't understand this. We can't be afraid of this stuff. We just can't. We have to do the right thing no matter what. We got to do the right thing. And most people intuitively understand the threat the Muslim Brotherhood is. Now, on another interesting note, in Saudi Arabia, the Saudis are going consciously moderate. At least that's what they're saying now. And that, I think, you know, I mean, everybody's, what's your definition of moderate, I guess, but I think there's some real big changes in the Middle East happening right now. Also on the international front, in North Korea, some odd, I'm going to tell you, I have a lot of sources, again, sending me information. But a lot of activity in the Sea of Japan. The United States has announced that it is doing joint military exercises with the Japanese. You have the North Koreans saying there will be no negotiations or no further negotiations. There are some signs that they may attempt another launch. And things are going eerily quiet. I think there is one, if not two, aircraft carrier groups there right now. And the Russians doing some exercises with their, I think, two airborne brigades within 150 miles of the North Korean border. A lot of people don't know that North Korea actually shares a border with Russia. It's a very small border, but does share a border with Russia and China. So things continue to escalate there. And as what I look for in evaluating some of this stuff, because when you get a lot of information from very good sources, you got to kind of piece together a picture. And when you see the North Koreans starting to go silent, that's when I start to be very attentive to what is happening. Because when they're blustering, they're usually doing that for a reason. And they're expecting a reaction. When they go silent, that's when you really need to be attentive to what's happening over there. Also on the international front, in Catalonia, Spain, the Catalonian people saying, we're going to be defiant. Catalan authorities, in fact, the Catalan president gave a message to Europe on Sunday, said, quote, and this is coming from BBC, Catalan authorities will not follow orders from the Spanish government if Madrid moves to reassert control over the region, end quote. So the Catalonians have given Spain an opportunity to negotiate peacefully. The Spanish government has not taken it, has arrested two civilian leaders, and is threatening to assert further control over the region. In fact, Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has announced plans to sack the region's government and curtail some of its powers. You start sacking governments and you're going to create a civil war. And it really looks like that's where it's headed in Catalonia. On the heels of this vote in Catalonia, you have Milan and Venice. Okay, so this is the region in northern Italy I was talking about. The Lombardy region and the Veneto region. Okay. Voted 95% for autonomy. 95%. Now, the Italian government recognized these as legitimate referenda. And this is what we've been talking to you about. You know, I mean, I just want to say this is really what we need to pay attention to, okay, all of us. I've been talking about this, that Catalonia is going to spread, and it already is beginning. And it's these regions that are the more productive, prosperous regions in Europe are saying, enough. We don't have garbage coming out of the EU or those host governments. And so 95% in northern Italy, Lega Lombarda, this long-standing tradition in northern Italy toward independence and self-determination, is now being borne out with an official vote. I expect as things continue to devolve in Catalan, and then you have more of these votes occur in Europe, you're going to have a disintegration of the European Union as we know it right now. And some of these countries, they may try to join the EU, like some of the Catalonians want to join the EU. But they're going to do it in smaller capacity, in smaller countries. And I think that's going to be difficult for the EU to manage that and to continue anyways. But keep your eye on that part of Europe, okay? And it's interesting. It's the same. There's a couple movies on Netflix about this, about the Siege of Vienna. Go take a look at the maps regarding the countries that participated in the Siege of Vienna. And not the countries, but the regions. Northern Italy, Hungary, Poland, part of the Czech Republic. Go take a look at the map. It's really interesting how it overlays on what's happening in these independence movements today. Also on the international front, Venezuela, we talked about this last week, 2,400% inflation. Well, I also mentioned that there were some payments due. Well, Venezuela missed 5 payments last week. Okay, $350 million in missed payments. Now, those payments have a 30-day grace period, so you got 30 days to pay them. But this Friday, Venezuela has nearly $1 billion due and $1.2 billion due the following Thursday. Okay, and this is being reported by the New American, a phenomenal source of information. I had some guy get on the social media the other day and try to question the New American and didn't give one single instance of where they reported something wrong. That's when I say, look, you're not going to be taken seriously. These guys have been very accurate over the years, and they're very clear on the numbers regarding Venezuela right now. And the problem is that Venezuela has less than $10 billion in foreign reserves, much of it illiquid. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, that means he doesn't have most of that $10 billion to move around, okay? That means it looks like Venezuela is going to default for sure. So watch the news this Friday. Watch the news next Thursday. We may see Venezuela officially default. And again, something they said could never happen in the modern era. Also on the international front, this sonic attack in Cuba, it was recorded, and it looks like even more people were harmed by this, not just embassy personnel. So we're going to keep our eyes on this. It's kind of running under the radar, but I'm going to keep reporting on it because it was so odd what happened, and it was so odd that not a lot was made out of it. And all of a sudden, boom, it comes into the news, and then it goes away again. On the national front, President Trump talking about debt forgiveness for Puerto Rico, $29 billion of debt forgiveness for Puerto Rico specifically being talked about. This is while the country, and Axios had this article, 78% still in the dark, 28% still without potable water. And it's not because there haven't been enough supplies and people sent down there. The problem is once it got on the ground, they didn't have the ability to distribute it. And it's important to understand this. That when infrastructure catastrophically fails, you lose bridges, you lose the ability to generate power to large areas, okay? It becomes very difficult, one, to communicate to the local populace where the supplies are going to be distributed, and two, to actually get those supplies out to those outlying areas because you have to project it, you have to transport it there. You can't take all the supplies and just put it there, especially some that have to be refrigerated. So Donald Trump has sent enough as part of the relief effort, but the problem is on the ground, a lot of the problems that Puerto Rico had with, some have alleged corruption, some have alleged mismanagement, may be the cause behind what is happening. And there's been several reports on this. But the underlying lesson for us is that if this can happen in an American territory with all of the supplies and people and everything that's needed to get sent down there, and it's still without electricity in vast portions of Puerto Rico and still without potable water in a large portion of Puerto Rico, why are we only preparing for 3 days? The power could indeed be out for a lot longer than that. And are we ready to love our neighbors in that situation? Also on the national front, The Economist, not a bastion of conservatism, giving a bubble warning saying that assets are way overvalued. Then, even more shockingly, The Atlantic publishing an article saying if we deregulate land use, in other words, we get rid of all these land use regulations all over the United States, it would have a massive positive effect on the economies of those areas and particularly the impoverished. Fairly amazing that they actually published that, but they did. Also on the national front, the JFK files, the last, supposedly, if they don't hold anything back, the last portion of the JFK files to be released on Thursday. Most everybody is of the opinion that not a lot is going to come out of that. No big surprises. Who knows? Also on the national front, and I really want to talk about this, because a couple years ago I brought this up and I got slammed a little bit in social media. It's not true what you're saying. Bo Bergdahl is a patriot. And I said, listen, I have talked to people inside the military. My sources inside the military are very adamant about this, that he was a deserter. Well, now he has pled guilty to desertion. In fact, he said, quote, and this is coming from The Blaze, Bo Bergdahl claims Taliban treated him better than U.S. Army. So all those people that are defending or were defending him back then that were slamming me on social media, I'm sure you're getting ready to type in an apology in your keyboard and send it, and an apology to all those people that called him on this back then. When we had all those reports from inside the military and all those people that served with him that were adamant about what had happened. And I found that when you have solid sources, eventually, the truth will become undeniable. Undeniable. But this is why I'm so adamant about using primary sources, vetting information, backing it up. And look, none of us is perfect. We all make mistakes. We do. But if you go through the process, and somebody comes and says, oh, I just can't be true. And you say, okay, well, cite the source to rebut what I'm saying. And they can't do it. Then they can't talk about it in an educated manner and they lose credibility. And that's the way we need to discuss things back and forth. And I had some quotes a while back that had been part of bills that had been drafted over and over again for years. And the quotes were just a little off. One of them was totally off. Somebody vetted him, called me on it. We fixed him. That's how you do this. You humble yourself enough to say, hey, I don't know what I don't know. I'm going to fix it. But you just don't go into a discussion and say, it just can't be true. It just can't be true. Bo Bergdahl is a patriot. It can't be true. You guys are just smearing. And here he is, finally pleading guilty to desertion. Also on the national front, Antifa coming out on November 4th, almost 100 years to the day of the Communist Revolution in Russia, but Antifa coming out November 4th and saying they are going to start essentially a revolution. Now, I have seen some flyers that are going to be handed out on November 4th. I have seen some signs that have been made for November 4th. And some of the rhetoric, they believe that they are recruiting hardline communists. I'm using that term intentionally. Hardline communist agitators to foment violence on November 4th. Now, every time they've given a date, it's never really happened on that date necessarily. Okay, so it's kind of the day after, maybe. So take that part with a grain of salt on the date. But the rhetoric is very clear. They believe they're at war. They will do absolutely everything they can to remove Trump and Pence from the White House. And some of the rhetoric is stretching to, and they say anything they can. I mean, what does that mean? What does that mean? So be alert on November 4th. The timing of this, 100 years to the day, or almost to the day of the Communist Revolution, it's not lost on me. But I believe there are a lot of Americans out there who love this country and will never let some sort of a communist revolution happen here, and particularly here in the American Redoubt. Also on the national front, fewest jobless claims since 1973, another positive coming out of the Trump administration, and the Southern Poverty Law Center kicked out of the Department of Defense finally. Probably my favorite headline. Finally. Also on the national front, Uranium One. Now, there were a bunch of alternative news outlets, Readout News included, who talked about the fact that there were uranium deposits in some of these lands in the West where there was some very questionable bureaucratic activity. Now it looks like that the Russian collusion was not with Donald Trump, but with the Clinton Foundation. An investigation is being launched into this to determine the extent. And remember that Uranium One, this may be the scandal that finally brings down the Clinton machine. On the regional front, Bundy Ranch trial, Eric Parker, Scott Drexler. So these are the two guys. Remember there were 34 counts where they were not guilty, and there were six where they had a hung jury. Well, the federal prosecutors finally agreed to a deal, it sounds like, with Parker and Drexler, where they will get a misdemeanor obstruction charge, time served. And it sounds like they're going to plead out to that. So that just leaves then, at the end of October, the full Bundy Ranch trial of the leaders. Now, understand what's happened during this whole thing. Most of the people have been found not guilty, okay? And now you have this plead out to very small charges, which is an indicator they just didn't want to try them again. Also on the regional front, the Wolf study that came out from Wild Goose at WSU, and yes, I mispronounced his name intentionally. Wild Goose's study is debunked by the Washington Policy Center on wolves, saying just some really kind of outlandish things that he said in the original study. In the Washington Policy Center is just saying, no, that's just not true. The more wolves there actually are more cattle and sheep deaths. So once again, showing that proper management, wise use, is always better than non-use. And you have to ask the question, should they be involved in that type of wolf management anyway? Constitutionally, I think it's dubious at best. In fact, there was a reason wolves were removed from the Wild West. Go read the stories about some of the encounters of wolves with the first settlers and also with the Native American population. Also, on the regional front, talked about the economic devastation of Hearst. It sounds like we are not going to have any sort of resolution prior to the election, and probably not prior to December. So we're going to continue that. A lot of people asking me about that. We're working on it. Representative Dave Taylor doing a great job on this. But doesn't sound like there's going to be any resolution until at the earliest December. On the local front, kudos to the Spokane Valley City Council. 150 jobs coming in with Katerra. And there's several other companies on the heels of that because of the work that's being done to expand the existing industrial park, at least expand it for development. It's not actually physically expanding in size. So great job, City of Spokane Valley. And elections are coming up, and my ballot recommendations should be out either tonight or tomorrow morning. And I want to highlight one thing on there before we get to our guest, and it's this. The Progressive Voter Guide, okay? Fuse Washington. Literally, it's called The Progressive Voter Guide, okay? It's put together by Fuse Washington, one of the most socialist organizations in the state, has endorsed the opponents of everyone sitting on the city council. So for those of you particularly that are looking at the Ed Pace Ben Wick race. Okay, Ben Wick was endorsed by the progressives. Okay, same guy who also supported the almost 12 cents gas tax increase, making us the number two in the nation as far as highest gas taxes. Okay, was endorsed by the progressives. Now, I've heard a lot of things going around in the community. Look, you cannot call yourself a conservative or a constitutionalist and vote for this progressive slate of candidates, any one of them, who are on the progressive voter guide, most of whom got below three stars. One got a zero on the We Believe We Vote interviews on biblical and constitutional foundations. So understand what I'm saying when I say this, okay? The choices are stark. And if you want Spokane Valley to be and continue to be the capital of free Washington, the light on a hill for conservatism, a place that doesn't have debt, doesn't raise taxes, balances its budget, vote for the city council members that are there because they're doing a great job. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that is praying for the show. And make sure you go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. And if you want to help keep us on the air, you can always go to VoteShea.com. Well, my guest today is Jake McCauley, CEO of Institute on the Constitution, The American View. And I read your articles all the time because they always give me talking points and really kind of simplify ideas. So thank you for what you're doing out there, Jake, and thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio today.
Hey, Matt Shea, thank you for having me. You are the embodiment of what I am preaching, so thank you for doing it, brother. You're doing The American View.
That's it. We got to live the American view. So for listeners that might not be familiar with the Institute on the Constitution, if you could kind of give a little bit about what it is, what you do, what your resources are for folks out there, especially folks that might be running for office or considering running for office or just maybe supporting people that are running for office.
Absolutely. Institute on the Constitution is a nonprofit organization. Actually, I would call it a ministry. This, I believe, is my calling. It's been around for well over a decade. Our founder is 2004 presidential candidate Michael Anthony Perutka. And the reason that he started this was to reinvigorate Americans with what it means to be American. That's why our website is The American View. It happens to be the American view of law and government that we teach. Number one, that there is a God. Number two, our rights come from him. And number three, the purpose of civil government, its only purpose, is to secure our God-given rights.
It's as simple as that, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And that's right in the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. They're endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. So there is a God. Our rights come from him. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
So where do we go wrong today, you know, going beyond protecting those rights and thinking that we need to maybe do something in the positive sense? I'm being a little vague, but I think you know where I'm going. So how do we go wrong today? I mean, what do you look for out there that's wrong that most Americans may not think is wrong or not according to what the founders envisioned for our country?
Well, I think many people that complain about government overreach or government tyranny or government doing this or that are complaining about areas and jurisdictions, I'm going to use the word jurisdiction, that government does not have. So, for example, when God ordained government, he did it for the purpose of securing our God-given rights. He is the minister of God to thee, speaking of us, for good. He said, do good, and you'll have praise of the same. But if you do evil, fear government power, because they have the power of the sword. Jesus said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. But he limited Caesar's jurisdiction when he said, give to God what is God's. See, the first government jurisdiction, and the largest government jurisdiction, is self-government. We are to self-govern. That is the biggest, most broadest power that exists on this planet. It's you to choose. It's your right to choose to obey the laws. It's your right to choose to serve the one true God. It's your right to not perjure, not kill, not steal, so on and so forth. But if you decide to break that, in other words, you refuse to self-govern, then God has ordained another jurisdiction. It's called the family, and that's generally children, and that's the function, the duty of families to raise children, because children aren't very self-governed. And so God gave the jurisdiction of family, health, education, and welfare, because they have children. The state doesn't have children. They've never been pregnant. They're not in charge of our health care. That is a family jurisdiction, education, and welfare. All children are welfare cases, but it was not meant to be perpetual. And God ordained the church jurisdiction. So if a family member or an individual breaks God's law, the church has a government that steps in and speaks God's prophetic word. In other words, this is what God says, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not do that, and so on. The church's also function and duty is to speak to government. Now, they do not have the sword. In other words, they cannot compel you to obey God's prophetic word. But they can pronounce God's word, and they can also pronounce the penalties that God has ascribed to said crime, which the government, now the state, or we could refer to as the state or Caesar, their job is to execute justice. And the reason they execute justice is, as God's servant, he gave us the right to life, liberty, property, Genesis 1, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and subdue it. And he gave man and woman the right to life when he created them equal in his image. And so government job is to secure our rights by making sure, enforcing the justice system and defending the borders. The minute government gets off of that jurisdiction, it gets out of that jurisdiction and starts to give, they have to break one of God's other laws, which is thou shalt not steal, in order to provide for what they are giving. In other words, they're redistributing wealth. So while you may think your neighbor has enough money and you're kind of down on your luck, or Sally Joe, who has three kids by two different men, she doesn't have a job, she's very sick, she needs some of your neighbor's money. If you were to break into his house and take it and then give it to Sally, you would be thrown in prison for a crime. Government is not authorized to do the same thing, even if we all agree collectively that they should be, not their jurisdiction. So that is where we get in trouble. When government goes outside of securing rights, and now they start to give out different things or give you things instead of just protecting your things, your life, liberty, property.
Well, let's talk about one way that's a little bit insidious, I think, that people miss. They miss the point on property rights. So, for example, somebody has a house in a neighborhood, and they do their yard a certain way, or maybe they don't take care of their yard a certain way, and the next-door neighbor feels it's their duty to hold it over that other neighbor and invade the property rights, or call government, call a government bureaucrat to enforce those strictures they have in their own mind about what that person's property should look like. And we're getting involved in our neighbor's business, and people don't see that as really a violation of what we're talking about when we talk about the right order of government. And yet people do it every day, and we call themselves Christian conservatives. And it bothers me greatly that we have that idea. What is your thought on that specific point, and how do you talk to people about it and educate them on that?
Well, firstly, I want to say the government, as in federal government, has zero jurisdiction on your private property. I want to say that again. Federal government has no jurisdiction. Some bureaucrat in D.C. has no business telling you what to do on your private property. Your state government has probably, because again, we delegated authority to the federal government through our states. So the feds need to speak to the state. And there's been some fundamental breakdowns through there, even through constitutional amendments, which I don't want to get lost in the weeds here. So I just want to stick to this. The state may have certain, laws or certain statutes or things like that. I know in my particular development that I live in, I bought into covenants. There's certain covenants that need to be obeyed, things that we've all agreed, and we all kind of gave up certain liberties of our own to live in this development with the agreement that if we break these certain rules, but we went into it with both eyes open. Does that make sense? So after I did that, I can't then come back and say, hey, well, I agreed to this on the front end, but now I don't. So when it comes to property rights, just as an example, I found the most harassment comes from federal agencies, which have zero jurisdiction. The states should not be allowing federal agencies into their state to bully independent citizens or, people in their state. If the state comes down and has certain regulations, we are close to our representatives. Matt, I had the opportunity to meet with you and a handful of other gentlemen at a restaurant. I could speak to you. It was much easier than getting an appointment with my congressman in Washington, D.C., who then gets lost in a whole school of people in D.C. Enacting legislation that could potentially affect me. So I think if we have a redress there, that should go on the state side. And even at that, I think the state's authority over property and things like that, and I don't know the specifics you're speaking of, I'm just speaking in generalities here, that our local jurisdiction should have far more authority than the state jurisdiction does, if that makes sense.
It does, absolutely.
Our county council, things like that.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And that's, it's closest to the people. That's the best.
Yeah.
But we also have this idea of reciprocal rights. You know, if you know, I give you property rights, you give me property rights. I respect your property rights. In covenant communities today, we have a lot of people trying to use government, bureaucrats mm-hmm. or bureaucracy, to gain leverage over something, whether that's their neighbor's property or whether that's a business interest. They're trying to use that bureaucracy to get a leg up, right? And that's really yeah. what I see as a big problem today. And you'll see it among constitutional conservatives as well.
So what we're trying to do is, in our own self-government jurisdiction, which we have authority over, we're trying to leverage government power, which is always the danger because government is power. We're trying to leverage government power to do something God said not to do. So rather than self-governing ourselves, and this is the beauty of biblical capitalism, Christ does not stress don't develop wealth. What he stresses is do not be covetous, do not steal. And on the flip side of that, he stresses give, bless, give bountifully. So if we were to look at government as an instrument of just a means in order to further myself by downplaying others or forcing somebody, I just sat on jury duty, and I'm so glad we have the jury because it can stop state tyranny. Because oftentimes these bureaucracies get self-interested, and they just pummel us as individuals because there's no way an individual can stand against the government empowered with the wealth or the ability to tax and the ability to use force. So the jury is a way for the common citizenry to stop tyranny at a certain level. And that's, I think, we should flip our mentality. Government should not be used as a billy club. It should only be used to secure our God-given rights. It should not be used offensively, only defensively.
So let's talk a little bit. You mentioned Christianity. Some people get uncomfortable with that. They say, are you advocating a theocracy? I don't think they understand what that exactly means when they say that. But they say that Christianity really does not have a place in America today. How do you counter that? And you have a great article. I just want to use this as a lead into one of the great articles you wrote about Christianity being the answer. So if you could, go ahead.
I think Christianity, what it does is it brings humanity into the equation, but it also offers, more importantly than that, it offers a standard. And unless there is a standard, unless there is, as Jefferson said, absolute truth, we hold these truths to be self-evident, then what you end up having is you have individuals that can change the paradigm. So you could come into, for example, court and think you're following the law, but then newsflash, we just changed it again. On what basis? So the only way to have security of rights is to have an understanding of what law is, where law comes from, because law is the instrument by way that God protects our rights. In other words, he gives us the right to life. He says, thou shalt not kill. He gives us the right to property. He says, thou shalt not steal, and so on. So when we understand the laws of nature and nature is God, which is a popular phrase in the Enlightenment period, mostly the laws of nature, in America, we were not Enlightenment thinkers. we benefited from some of the quote-unquote enlightenment, but we saw God as the source of that enlightenment, and we always tethered our law, our philosophies to him. So men like Locke, Montesquieu, Blackstone, these were Christian men that wrote treatises on the Bible and the authority of God and government. When our founders said that we had a right to declare independence, it was according to the laws of nature and nature's God. So God, that they were referring to, was our creator. Our creator was the Judeo-Christian God and the God of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who gave a law code and the law standard. So Christianity, as it comes into humanity, it helps us self-govern. I know it has for me. I know that I'm a wretched sinner, and I need the grace of God. And I had a conversion experience that was quite significant when I was 17 years old. And I know without that restraining love that God puts in my heart, I would be a rotten guy. I always bring up this just in case there's some of you that think we can be good without Christianity. As a human being, I would like to find anybody on the planet that would volunteer to have their thoughts recorded for 2 days. I'll even give them the best 2 days of their life. To have them recorded and then played on a big screen with all the major news networks to cover it. Nobody would do that. We're ashamed because deep inside we know that we're sinful humanity. Christianity fixes the self-government problem. Christianity teaches families how to raise their children in the nurture and admonition and fear of the Lord, how to bless their children, how to educate their children. All of these things are found by Christianity as they permeate a family government. A church jurisdiction, obviously, we have all the teachings we need as the Christian church in both the Old and New Testaments and the examples to speak the prophetic word to not only individuals, not only to families, but also to governments. We have the book of the prophet that lay that out. We also have a whole lot of infrastructure in the law books of God, the Torah and the first five books. So, lastly, we have civil government. Well, Jake, you can't have Christianity and civil government. Well, our founding fathers wholeheartedly disagreed. God created government. Government was not created of itself. It was not instituted by man. God created it for the purpose that the individuals were weak. And by that, I mean, if you have a gang of 10 people armed with guns and Uzis and mean-spirited folks, and they attack an individual unarmed in his own property, we already know who's going to win. So God created the mechanism of government to secure the rights of that one individual, that minority. When God did that, he also placed standards and boundaries. I said before, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, but give to God what is God. These standards and boundaries are limited to two functions that we can see. Guard the borders, defend the borders. Defend the borders of your private property, defend the borders of your state, defend the borders of your country from those that would come in to seek to plunder your life, liberty, and property, or pursuit of happiness. Secondly, administer the justice system. When an individual takes away your rights, by the way, those rights are given by God. That does not make God happy. He does not smile upon rapists, criminals, murderers, arsonists, those that perjure, and so on. He ordained government to then come in and secure your rights by executing justice and causing wrath to fall upon those that had made your rights insecure or had taken your rights, and then issue a penalty or an edict that will then cause your rights to be given back to you in some way, shape, or form. So God does that. Christianity does that. Christianity also says to government, I don't care if you're a Muslim. I don't care if you're a homosexual. I don't care if you're a Christian or if you're an atheist. Of course, I'm using popular terms right now. I'm not trying to make any of these people groups more significant. They're people. They're created in God's image. But I'm using them because the press would say that Christians would say that they don't have their rights if Christians get into power. That is untrue. That is the furthest thing from the truth. As a matter of fact, I would submit to you that all the regimes around the world, all the government systems, Christianity is the most humane because it sees that everybody's created in God's image, everybody has the right to life, liberty, and property, and everybody has the our government has the duty to secure their life, liberty, and property. But when you go outside of the boundaries of law, that's when you forfeit your right to life, liberty, and property. If I murder, I can be thrown in prison and even lose my life in capital punishment in free states like Texas. If I steal somebody's property, I can forfeit my property. I no longer have that right because I have gone outside of the law. I've become an outlaw. I no longer have the protection of the law. I get persecuted by the law. So I think that's the best way that we can see when Christianity defines the terms, defines the playing ground, and that ultimate commandment of loving your neighbor as yourself, that harnesses us into morality. And I wouldn't even say humanity, I would say morality, which then will cause it, it will reciprocate into society to secure the rights of everybody.
So let's talk about one of those rights that's been in the news. Actually, it's two of them that have been in the news lately. The idea that we can, and we have about 5 minutes left or so, but that we can curtail speech, that there can be only proper speech and only religion exercised, you know, behind the four walls of the church or in your own home, but not in public. How do you counter that specifically?
I have a column that I wrote at theamericanview.com on the First Amendment. And one of the issues was, of course, in universities, safe spaces and things like that, that the freedom of speech does not exist in certain areas, right? I think that's what you're referring to. So now we've got to keep our religious speech, for example. I can't promulgate the gospel if I work at the courthouse, or I can't promulgate the gospel if I'm attending a public university or maybe a public grade school. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Okay. Or if I'm a pastor, I can't preach, on the radio, for example, that marriage is between one man and one woman for fear that that might seem as hate speech, or that I believe biologically, genetically, and according to God's word, that you're either a man or a woman. You can't be a man-woman. You can't be confused. You can't be both and things like that. So that particular speech, first of all, it agrees with the laws of nature and nature's God. And if we declared our independence because of the laws of nature and nature's God, and we developed the freest government, we developed the freest society in the world to this day, I believe, based on the premise of the law of nature and nature's God, then I would say you only have the freedom to speak speech that is within the confines of the laws of nature and nature's God. If you go outside of that, you shouldn't have liberty to do that. In other words, blaspheming or perjuring, for example, or I guess perjuring could go in a variety of different ways. I don't know, the right to lie about somebody's business publicly and damage their goods or damage their business. I don't have the right to, in a crowded room, yell fire. I don't have the right to pronounce fighting words and things like that. So there's certain limitations that the laws of nature and nature's God limit us to. But if we turn the corner and we say that speaking the gospel or speaking God's word somehow is at odds or becomes the antithesis of a free society, then I think we find ourselves on the wrong side of the pendulum on this. Because if a man can limit your speech about God, by the way, your creator, the one that gave you your rights, then what is that man trying to do? Well, that man is trying to inevitably become God. And if he can take the rights that God fundamentally gave us that are written on paper, then what rights is he going to take next? Ultimately, he'll take any right that we give. And by that, I mean not just, hey, here you go, Mr. Government, take this right. I'm saying the ones that we refuse to now fight for or assert. So I think it's a very, very, very dangerous slope if we eradicate speech having to do with the God that gave us our rights, because then we're going to exchange God for a tyrant and a man. And folks, history is full of dictatorships, atheist regimes, different religious factions and zealous groups. America is not that. If we want that, let's go to a different country. Let's not try to change this country, because turning out a light switch does not make it brighter in a room. It just makes us like everybody else, and more destruction ensues.
All right, in the last couple minutes, people want to go to the Institute on the Constitution. They want to read about what you are talking about and get to know you more. Where can they go? And also, a real quick message to the young people out there that are listening.
Absolutely. TheAmericanView.com. We have a 12-lecture Constitution course that's self-taught with 20-minute lectures. So there's 12 of them. You will learn the Declaration and the Constitution from primary source documents. I want to teach and educate Americans to think American. So please go to our website and check out our course. We have thousands of graduates in all 50 states. It's taught right there in the Spokane area, right where you're at, Matt, and in various different places in Washington. So please get in touch with us if you want to know how you can take that and learn more. A message to the youth, this next generation. Folks, we have been dropping the ball like crazy. Young people, you will be the determining factor between liberty and tyranny. Your generation is not just under assault, but what's so horrible about this is many in your generation are ushering in this assault, thinking they're doing the right thing, thinking they're loving people, thinking they're going to produce more equality. But down on the fundamental basis of this, and Stalin, not just Stalin, but Lenin more so, did it the same way. He went to the educated. He went to those that were in college, the intellectuals, and he convinced them of a paradigm which ended up destroying their nation and their culture dozens of years later. It didn't take long. Study the founding documents. At least have a contrast to what you're being taught. Secondly, it doesn't take a majority to prevail. Sam Adams said, an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires in the hearts of men. That's who prevails. That's what he did. That's what the Sons of Liberty did. That's what George Washington did. That's what our founding fathers did. I encourage you that one man with knowledge and one man with authority can lead thousands without it. Your generation, if you get constitutionally literate, if you get smart and you educate yourself, you will be leading, because many in your generation are being dumbed down and could care less about it. They're more focused on entertainment and pop culture. As a result, you could find yourself in a seat in a position of power so that you can bring the right perspective of good, right, goodness, righteousness, and truth.
That's exactly right. Well said. Jake McCauley, Institute on the Constitution, American View, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio. We'll have you on again, my friend, and I hope to catch up with you when you get back up here. Blessings.
My hope. Thank you, Matt. Godspeed.
All right. We got only a few seconds left. Very quickly, DNC paid for dirt Russian dossier. Check out Drudge Report. Bombshell headline out there right now. May God bless all of you, and take the opportunity tonight to pray with your spouse and your family. May he make this generation the greatest one.